Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Thanks for being here. My name's Tim Stevens, and I get to lead this session, which is kind of fun. Curious why you came to a session about leading with no strategy or something like that. I looked at the title earlier today and I thought, what was I thinking with a title like that? Although it is something I believe and I do want to talk about it. So glad to be here. So quick bio. I spent 9 years in nonprofit, in the nonprofit world, early in my adult life, and I spent 20 years as an executive pastor at a church in Indiana called Granger Community Church. Was there till last summer, and then last summer joined a group called the Vanderblumen Search Group, and so now I get to spend my days and weeks helping churches find staff, which is about the funnest job in the world. So get to kind of use my experience from being in both nonprofit and church world and kind of help churches fill key positions. So that's a lot of fun. So I spend pretty much all day, every day talking to church leaders and pastors and people that are in life transition and being able to kind of help them through those conversations. So wanted to talk about this this conversation about leadership, developing leaders without a strategy. It's a question I've gotten a lot, is about, you know, what's the strategy for developing leaders? So the church I was at when I left last summer, we had 129 staff members. 123 of them were internal hires. They were people that we developed from the staff and eventually hired. You know, they came up kind of through the ranks as volunteers. And so a lot of times people would come and they'd ask about that, like, okay, so what's, you know, what are the classes, what's the strategy you go through? And, you know, for a while, I didn't really have an answer. I don't really know what, there really isn't a strategy. But the more I kind of drilled down on it and with my teammates is realizing that it was really more about leadership culture than a leadership strategy. And not that a strategy is bad by any means, and not that having hoops to jump or that's necessarily bad in and of itself, but when I think through what really develops leaders, you know, when you're putting them in the pipeline and out the other end, you want someone that can lead effectively a ministry area or department, or a team or whatever, that it, a lot of it is about culture. So 10 ways to develop leaders without a strategy. Talk through these. How many of you are really anal and you're going to get mad if I don't get to all 10? Because I'll need to know that up front. Is there anyone?
If it's recorded, I'll be okay.
Okay. All right. So I may not get to all 10. With the size of this group, it'd be great if you just have a question or comment, just spout it out or raise your hand or whatever. That's great. We don't need to save questions till the end. I'd love to be practical for you. So if there's something along the way that's you want to drill down on, that's great. Let's do it. So again, the sense that if you've got a leadership culture, there's a sense that that breeding leaders, duplicating, multiplying leaders is it's in the air that you live and that you breathe and the culture of that organization rather than a specific process to follow. And in a culture that constantly or consistently produces great leaders, I think many of these things are at play, and these are the 10 things. I'm going to drill down a lot on some of them, and I'll just mention some others. So first one, if you want to write it down, is that rising leaders are given significant responsibility. Rising leaders are given significant responsibility. They don't have to wait for a diploma or even experience. Someone sees potential in them, sees the capacity to be able to lead, and they notice that, and they begin to give them responsibility. Not that they set them free and don't pay attention to them anymore and kind of put them off and let them run, but with oversight, they're giving them responsibility. I think, you know, a couple ideas under this. It has to do with the idea of just hoops. How many hoops do I have to jump in order to be able to do, you know, to do leadership in this organization or in this church? In some churches, there are significant amounts of hoops to jump. I've met with churches and talked to churches where, you know, there's leadership classes, there's membership classes, there's even meet one-on-one with deacons or elders or people on the board in order to be able to kind of then you get blessed as, okay, now you're a leader in this church and now you can lead, which just discourages people from running all the hoops and from going through the process. And it makes it very difficult for the church to multiply leaders as fast as they need to if they're going to be growing. So, you know, you have to think through how many hoops do we have to jump in order to allow someone to lead. You know, depending on what the leadership level is, there may be no hoops whatsoever. It may be you're available and you're interested, okay, you can lead. Example, that might be, you know, if you've got a larger church and you've got parking lot teams, people helping park people in the parking lot. Do they need to be a Christian? No, I mean, it'd be great if they don't cuss at people, you know, in the parking lot. I've had actually parking team leaders do that. So, you know, there are some maybe some check marks you want to make sure that they can treat people well and they can treat guests well. But, man, what a great entry point, serving on a parking team, to be able to be, you know, shoulder to shoulder with other Christ followers and be able to grow in their faith in that way. So hoops are important. Credentials, you know, if this is under, again, under number one, you know, if all of your leaders or your hiring staff, and they have to have had their master's degree or they have to have had their four-year bachelor's degree, you're going to miss out on a lot of great rising leaders if those are the requirements you have. It has to do with trust. You know, when you're going to give a rising leader significant responsibility, you're trusting. You're trusting the fact that God is bigger than just you. You're trusting the fact that they're probably not going to do it the same way that you do it, but it's okay. You're trusting the fact that it's going to be done differently than you do it. It's going to be maybe a lesser quality initially than you're going to do it. And it also has to do with margin. If you're going to give rising leaders significant responsibility, then you have to have the margin to be able to have space for conversations, for coaching, for empowering them. If you don't have the margin, you're going to be frustrated by giving rising leaders responsibility because they're going to mess up at times, and you're not going to have time or space to process it with them, or you're going to hear about it way too late after a lot of damage is done. Whereas when you have the margin to coach and empower and come alongside rising leaders, then it's okay. You're not going to be far away if they make a mistake. So giving leaders rising or significant responsibilities. Second one that I think ties hand in hand with that, more than responsibility, those leaders are given the authority to make decisions. It may be the number one frustration I hear from leaders that are thinking about leaving the church that they're at. It's because they have the responsibility. They've been given the title. You know, I'm the youth pastor, or I'm the adult groups pastor, or whatever. So they've been given the title, but they can't make any decisions. They're constantly having to, I got to wait till I talk to so-and-so because I can't make the decision on my own. And so we give them the work. We give them the busy work, but we don't give them the ability to make decisions. You know, so youth pastors, you know, plan the event, spend time with the kids, whatever, but they can't spend any money. They don't have any power to spend any money, which is just frustrates leaders because they just want to move ahead. And so being able to give them authority and responsibility is huge, which ties into number three in a leadership culture. I think veteran leaders, the senior leaders, whatever they're called in your organization, they refuse to micromanage. Micromanagement usually comes from a good place, a good intention, I should say, in that we want to protect the quality of the work because we're convinced it matters so much that we're like, I want that to be done right. Only know it will be done right if I'm involved in making sure it's done right. So it comes from a good intention. But it sucks the life out of high-capacity leaders. They won't stick around in an organization where they're not allowed to be able to move forward and lead and given some space for that. I think of it sometimes as the loose, tight principle. In other words, there's things that you do need to hold on to tightly, and there's things that you should hold on to loosely. So, for example, you know, the mission, you know, the mission of your organization, the mission of your church. At my church, it was helping people take their next step toward Christ together. So that shouldn't be up for grabs in the organization. It shouldn't be just bring in any leader and they can change the mission if they want to. No, that's the mission. We hold on to that tight. we held on to our core values very tightly. It's like these are the values that kind of symbolize how we act and treat each other. So those things we're going to hold on to tightly. The things we're going to hold on to loosely are things that are related to their ministry area. It's like, hey, we need to plan the men's retreat. So you can say, hey, go plan the men's retreat, but if you tell them this is the speaker you need to get and this is the venue we're using and this is the exact process you need to sign people up and this is when it needs to start, but you go ahead and run it, it's like you've made all the decisions for them, and then you're not going to get a high-capacity leader to step into that position. They're not going to grow in that position to become a better leader either, because they'll be frustrated like that. So a lot of times there's like this vicious cycle that happens where bad hiring decisions are made. So you've got staff that maybe shouldn't be leading in areas they're leading. So the senior pastor, the senior leaders kind of jump in and start running things. And then the organization starts to get bottlenecked and people get frustrated. And so the high capacity leaders that you do want around, they start leaving because they're frustrated by the organization. And the senior leader's too busy to run things properly and to do good quality interviews to replace the people that are leaving. And so bad hiring decisions are made, and you get that cycle that kind of rotates around. And some of you maybe have worked in an organization like that where it's like you're in this vortex, vicious cycle, and you can't get out of it. So if you want to, in a healthy leadership culture, you decide the non-negotiables. Bring great people on the team, great leaders on the team, and then get out of the way and watch them do great things. And be there, be close enough to be able to pick up the pieces, because occasionally mistakes will be made. Be close enough to be able to have mentoring conversations. And we'll talk later about making sure those conversations are filled with questions more than statements. That's huge. So I kind of want to stop there. That's the third one. Any comments, questions, thoughts about any of these three topics, giving leaders responsibility, the authority to make decisions, and refusing to micromanage? Thoughts, comments, questions? Great point. So I have, we have four kids, and one of them is 18. So my 18-year-old, his name's Hunter. Hunter doesn't have a lot of passion right now to learn how to change a diaper. So I could take him through a class or a course, you know, I could give him the step-by-step, make him watch the videos or whatever, and, you know, he'd probably have his device in front of him and say, whatever, okay. I don't know when he'll get married, but fast forward, let's say 5 years, and he has a brand new baby at home, and it's the first time his wife has gone out on the shopping trip by herself, and he has a mess in front of him, right? At that particular point, he'll be like all ears. For learning how to change a diaper. I mean, he'll call on the phone and he'll be listening. So I think of that in the same way that, like, on the leadership development side of things, I mean, and I think about the significant steps that through my life where I've grown as a leader has always been in a practicum kind of sense. It's when I've been on the job learning, when I've needed to know, that's when the leadership training has happened best and stuck with me. Again, I work with a lot of churches, working with a church now where it's really hard to kind of pinpoint who they're looking for because they don't have the culture to come alongside staff and develop them. So they're looking for someone who is already completely developed in that area that needs no coaching or mentoring or accountability at all, but that is also very highly tied into their vision and values and mission and culture and all that. So hard person to find because they don't have a coaching. It's not a coaching system. It's just a coaching environment where I know when I'm hiring staff, I've got to be there next to them. And if not, things are going to get off course pretty fast, and I'm going to have potentially a mess on my hands. And potentially end up with just a hard leave, and it wasn't their fault necessarily. It could have been my fault just because I wasn't there to help coach and mentor them.
Do you believe that high capacity leaders can be made, or do you? Because sometimes I don't know about that.
I think they're discovered. I mean, yeah. I think they're she. I don't know if you heard. She asked if high capacity leaders can. You know, are they born or can they be made? And I think it's a discovery process because I think an 18, 20-year-old kid doesn't know they're a high-capacity leader. Maybe you've seen a little bit of that as they've grown up, but you may not know it either. And so you're kind of giving them opportunities and testing them. I think as our church grew pretty quickly over 20 years from about 200 to about 5,000, you know, there were leaders that we put in place when we had a few hundred that we didn't, you know, are they still going to be a leader when we're a church of 2,000? You know, you think they are, and some were, and some really surprised us, and some weren't. So I think it's a discovery process. So I don't know if they're being made in that discovery process or if you're just kind of unearthing what's already there. You're definitely, I do see certain cultures and environments that seem to churn out a lot of great leaders, which makes me think that they can be, it's an environmental, cultural thing that they can be made. Yeah. Any comments, questions, thoughts? Number four, I'll just hit real fast, is just in a leadership culture, there's a constant monitoring of how your leader is wired. This is especially true with young leaders, millennials, where you know you're trying them in different things to see how they're wired, and maybe they're a great leader, but they have certain passions, or they're a great leader and they have certain skills that need developed. And so I think in a leadership culture, let me take the opposite. In a non-leadership culture, there's a sense of fill the position, do the task. Someone over here has a need. Don't talk to my people because they're my people and they're filling roles here, and I can't think about a gap in my ministry area right now. So, whereas I think in a positive, good leadership culture, there's a sense of we're more concerned about that individual and developing them as a leader, as a follower of Christ, as a disciple, than we are in filling positions on our task chart or organizational chart. And so there's this constant monitoring. How is that person wired? What are they learning? What is God, you know, built into them as far as spiritual gifts and their wiring, as well as what are they discovering in the process? Whereas used to say to our volunteers, you can't steer a parked car. So you don't know like where you want to jump in or where you want to volunteer. You're not sure. Just jump in somewhere and we'll help you, because once you start moving, then we can kind of help steer you, and this isn't a good fit, okay, let's try over here. And whereas if they're just doing nothing and waiting for that you know, message from God on where they should serve, it's more difficult to find that. The fifth thing on a leadership culture is a flexible work environment. Not just about sitting at your desk for a certain number of hours. This relates mostly to more to staff than to volunteers. But it's kind of an outcome-based leadership where looking to get certain things done. We're not looking to see how much time you spend at your desk or at your computer in front of your whatever your work assignment is. I get a lot of questions. I do a coaching group with executive pastors, and I get questions often. How many hours do you make your staff work, or how many hours do you require your staff? Or should I make everyone work the same office hours, or should I have set office hours? Questions like that. So I think that's important to think about. And I would separate this into two different categories. So you have people on your team or your staff that are leadership level. You know, you might call it director level, pastors. They're running entire areas of your ministry. And I think for those, and they're full-time, they're staff. I think for those people, it's really difficult to differentiate between your work hours and your not work hours, especially in the church world. You know, you're doing counseling conversations and taking phone calls at all hours of the time. You can't really clock your work. So you're jumping on email, you're answering emails, you're solving problems. So it's very difficult to differentiate. I do think it's important, though, at that level, and many of you would be at that level, to figure out what renews you and to figure out how you can disengage. At times we used to tell our staff, there's three parts to every day. You should work really hard for two of them. So that means you got evening meetings. Don't come in the morning. Just disengage in the morning and then work really hard in the afternoon and evening. Or your kid has a soccer game in the middle of the afternoon. Or maybe then you're working in the morning, taking the afternoon with your family, and then working again in the evening. So we, you know, just trying to balance that out. I think a lot of times in our world, in the church world, we are motivated by our mission and our cause. We tend to take a lot of that on our own shoulders and think, boy, if I just work a few extra hours, you know, people are going to be saved from the, you know, flames of hell, or a family is going to be rescued, or a marriage is going to be, you know, whatever it is. And sometimes that is true. Most of the time, it's not, and we really need to balance a healthy and model a healthy work schedule. Flexibility related to those that are on our teams. I think this is really important, and this plays into a lot of us are leading teams of millennials, and millennials now are what, up to age like 30 or something like that. I don't know what the cutoff is, but I think it's important to have most of your positions on your staff to be as flexible as possible, to where we're looking to get certain tasks, certain work done, and how you get at it is kind of up to you and up to your team and up to that ministry area. We're finding in today's culture people much more highly value flexibility than they do compensation. I have had and have working moms on my staff. They would much rather know that they have this flexibility to get their kids on the bus and to get their kids off the bus and to take their kids to the doctor every now and then to have a ton of money and a ton of vacation time and whatever. It's very, very true, especially millennials again. So those that would be considered millennials, there was a study done by the RSCG worldwide firm, and they found, as they were talking to Gen Y or millennial employees, that more and more of them are rejecting a traditional 8-hour workday. So that, you know, if you're advertising a job, it's 9 to 5 or whatever, a lot of millennials won't look at those because they found, among their findings, they found millennials won't accept jobs where they can't access Facebook. They value workplace flexibility more than money, and they're always connected to their jobs through technology. And I've talked to executive pastors who say, you know what, we have this policy, or we actually, through our firewall, we block Twitter and Facebook and all these things because we want our employees to stay focused and productive. And this study and others have found the opposite is true. Your employees are less productive if they don't have that access, because they're so integrated in their lives, that access both to communicate to your people and our guests in the church, as well as just to be able to have an integrated life. You require an 8-hour workday, and they'll give you 8 hours. It won't be highly productive, and you won't get anything after that when the email comes at night or whatever, because you're kind of drawing these really strict lines. So I think a trusting work environment helps produce leaders. I mean, people who are kind of wired as leaders and want to be developed as leaders and want to grow into that will be attracted to a flexible, trusting work environment. Doesn't mean it's a free-for-all structure where they, you know, where you know nothing about their work schedule or what's going on. Still some expectations, still responsibilities. You may have a slacker on your team that should not have a flexible work environment, that needs a little bit more structure because they don't have any work ethic at all. And so I'm not talking about them, but most of the people on your staff should not be slackers. If they are, then you have a hiring problem. We should probably talk about that. But looking at, are they getting their job done satisfactorily? Are they producing what we're trying to produce? Let's say it's the youth pastor, and the goal is to increase the number of kids involved in the ministry or in small groups or in community or in service. Are they getting that done? Well, okay, if they are, why do we care if they're at their desk at 10 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock in the morning when the work day starts? You may want to have, with a flexible work environment, have some all skate, all play times where it's like we're all together. So, example, this is I had a creative arts director that worked for me who led a team of like 12 or 13 artists, musicians, video producers, people like that. And so a lot of them are nocturnal, right? They're working in the middle of the night. But it was important to him to have some community. So 3 days a week, I think at 9:30 in the morning, he had a kind of everyone's there, no exceptions, all, you know, like a 20-minute or 30-minute kind of progress meeting. He said, then you can go home or go work offsite or go to Starbucks or whatever, but everyone's there. So having some of those specific times, I think, is important. I would ignore the urge to block or forbid Twitter, Facebook, those kind of things. People's lives are more integrated than ever, and I think to just allow that flexibility and freedom in an environment of trust that says, I trust that you're not going to spend 3 hours in this afternoon on Facebook, but it's there and it's available, and then they can continue to network with your people as well. Any thoughts or comments, questions about this whole idea of flexibility, flexible work environment?
I don't know that I would write it into the job description. I think it would just be in the culture of how you talk about it. So oftentimes, so I'm talking, you know, every day to people who are looking at jobs, and a lot of times the question is, what's the expectation? Or what are the days off? And I think that's when, you know, you can have conversations and with them and just say, you know what, most of us are working probably a 45 to 50 hour day, but we don't punch a clock, and it's really important to us to be in the community among the people. So if you're working a few hours at Starbucks, or if you're meeting off site with some people in the church, that's great. We actually value that. We embrace that. So I think it's more kind of informal like that. And I think as a team, if you have a team, you know, a department or a team or whatever, or your staff meetings, that you can talk about it that way as well. I think it also, it helps communicate trust among each other. Because in a fast-paced church environment, especially if it's growing and especially if the staff is getting larger, there's times when you can have this kind of silo mentality of, we do more work than they do because we are here and they are not. And I think we can use that as a teaching opportunity to talk about it, you know, the trust among each other and the fact that it's a narrative thing. It's what are we doing to accomplish the mission and the vision.
Cool.
All right. The sixth one is, I think we're number six, is they in a caring and effective leadership culture, there's the sense that you believe the best about each other. That you believe the best about each other. In the church world, there's going to be accusations that come, and I think in a several times as in my tenure as an executive pastor, there'd be times when someone would just throw an accusation at someone on the team. They did this, or they didn't do this, or I saw them do this, or I saw them here, or I heard this. And it meant the world to the staff anytime that happened, that my first gut response was to believe the best. And, you know, it's like, oh, that can't be true, because I know Julie, and that can't be true. Now, not that you don't do due diligence, especially if the accusation's about something that happened with a child or some kind of a moral deal. It's like you got to do some due diligence. But in all of it, you're just believing the best about each other, that you're standing up for each other. When it's even little things like, I don't think they work very much or whatever, it's like, no, they're very hard worker. I mean, you're just kind of believing the best. And what I find is people rise up to the level of your belief in them. Even if there's, even if your belief in them is a little bit off-based, because they really don't have as high a work ethic as you're communicating right now, people will live up to and rise up to kind of the level of your belief in them. And so I think that's huge. So I did that a number of times. I had a time when this kind of little pocket of people in the church kind of rose up and threw some accusations at me. And they were, I mean, for me, they were devastating, because I'd never, at that point, had never had anyone question my personal integrity. And it was like, where the heck is this coming from? And I couldn't figure it out. And it just meant the world to me that my lead pastor just kind of came in right beside me and believed the best and stood beside me. And we were able to uncover kind of where it was coming from, what was going on. And that just, it just exudes such, it exudes loyalty, you know, it really exudes loyalty out of people, because you're with them, they're with you. You just feel like, okay, I can face the world. I'm okay because they believe in me. I would say anytime, some real practical things on this, so believe the best. Real practical things on this is, if you receive an anonymous accusation about someone on your staff, give it no credence. And that's happened several times where it's an anonymous letter or it's an anonymous email. We couldn't track it down. And I'll let the individual know that the accusation came. Hey, just so you know, someone said this about you. We're taking this no further because it's anonymous and we don't believe a shred of it. So when it's anonymous, don't give it any, don't pay attention to it at all. When an accusation comes and you hear the one side of the story and it sounds very credible, and there's every reason to believe that maybe your staff member, your volunteer messed up, Just wait. Don't react. Get the entire story. Get the rest of the story. Believe the best in while you're doing kind of your discovery process. And there's times too. We've been in this time where someone so and so says this, and the person says nope, that didn't happen. And you do all the questioning and discovery you can, and you can't figure out who's telling the truth. For me, I'm going to side with my staff person every time. I'm going to side with my volunteer, with my leader. If I can't figure it out, then I'm believing the best. So this isn't natural. It's much easier to assume the worst. I mean, I think social media has done this to us. We kind of get real cynical and skeptical about what's going on. And so it's easy to fall for the gossip and the slander. And so sometimes it takes, you know, great discipline and integrity to kind of go against the popular opinion. But you'll get your best out of your team if you believe the best in them. So do that. Seventh is in a leadership culture, failure is not a deal breaker. Failure is actually celebrated, not from the standpoint of, hey, look, they failed. Isn't this awesome? But from the standpoint of from the way that you as a senior leader talk about something that failed, you don't talk about it as a failure because look at what we learned from it. And you know what? It was some kind of an alternate service for a while, and we tried it for that people in the church were clamoring for. We tried it for 8 weeks, and it started kind of here, and it just went downhill the whole 8 weeks. And so it was someone's idea, and we all bought into it, and they thought it was great, and it didn't work, it flopped. We did that with a young adult ministry for a while, tried it for 2 years, kind of started here, and it just slowly went down. And had staff person assigned to it, and it failed. I mean, ultimately it failed. So those kind of things, to lean into the lessons and what you can learn from it, but actually then give it some platform. Hey, look, we tried, and I think it's the greatest thing ever that we tried this, and it didn't work ultimately, but we learned a ton from it, and I'm so grateful to so-and-so for running point on that for these years. You know, kind of celebrate those. I don't remember the specific company it was, but it was a business story from, I think it was from GE maybe, where this guy, no, it was IBM. It was early years at IBM. And this guy, employee made a $10 million mistake. I mean, it just cost the company that much. And so he walks into the room thinking he's going to get fired. And the guy, the CEO at that time said, I'm not going to fire you. I just spent $10 million educating you. Why would I fire you now? You know, just kind of like this grace and this credence to, okay, you know, now we've learned this lesson, let's move on. So this culture of a place where it's okay to fail, what that does is it creates innovation, and it draws leaders. It draws the best out of leaders because if they see someone try something and it didn't work and they didn't get in trouble, then it says, okay, I can try some stuff. Like there's some space here to dream and to innovate, and that's pretty cool. Number eight in a leadership culture is a great leader gives away all the credit when someone on his team succeeds. So when there's success that happens, the leader, he or she is pointing to the team or the team member or the person that ran point on that. On the other hand, when someone messes up, he or she, the leader, takes the blame. You know, we didn't do great with this. We're going to do better next time, and doesn't deflect that at all. And this breeds within leaders kind of this, again, this loyalty, this respect, this desire to do the same thing. And it's unnatural to deflect the credit and to take the blame. It's you naturally want to do the opposite, but it just gains again the respect of the leaders. The ninth thing is, and this is what I'll sit on for a minute or two because I think it's so important, is that in a leadership culture, the senior leader, senior leaders, executive leaders, whatever you want to call them, they don't assume that they're the smartest people in the room when they walk in. In fact, they know that they're not. Smart leaders know that in any given room, there are smarter people than them on any given topic. And what that does is it pulls smarter leaders in. They want to be on a team like that to collaborate and to share what they know with the others. And so it cultivates that. Dan Wyden is a huge advertising legend in an advertising firm with a couple thousand employees. And he wrote in a book called Mavericks at Work, a great business book, he wrote that his job as the CEO of this large company is to walk in stupid every day. He says, I keep challenging the organization and myself to seek out unexpected ideas, outside influences, and new perspectives on old problems. He said, it's the hardest thing that I do every day. And he talked about the fact that that every day he walks in, the world has changed overnight. And he doesn't have all that information. Different people in his organization have different pieces of that information. And so if he just assumes, because he's the CEO, because his board has kind of blessed him with run this thing, if he assumes that he then has all the smarts, he's going to miss so much out. He said, you have to forget what you did and what you just learned. You have to walk in stupid every day because the world is changing. But unfortunately, and especially in the church, pastors walk in and they kind of exude the confidence in the air that they're the smartest person there and that they have the answer. And a lot of it's just the nature of the job does that to us. We have, you know, especially senior pastors or teaching pastors, they have scores or hundreds or thousands of people that come every week, not to talk, but to sit there in straight rows for an hour and listen to this guy say whatever's on his mind that's wise and smart and discerning and all that. So it kind of feeds into this notion that I'm pretty smart. I got a lot of good things to say because hundreds of people are coming to hear me say it every week, and they don't say a word while I'm talking. They just let me talk for 35 or 60 minutes or whatever it is at your place. And so there's that, it kind of builds against a listening leader. There's this, Chip and Dan Heath, they wrote a book called, does anyone remember? Make It Stick or Sticky, something about that. Yep.
Making Ideas Happen. Right?
That's a different book. That's a different book. But yeah, but they wrote a book about the curse of knowledge. And they said, as leaders, we have the curse of knowledge where we don't know what it's like to not know. And so that affects us in our leadership. You know, they said those who know stuff walk around as if they know stuff rather than walking around wanting to learn. So you've planted a church and it's going, it's been several years and you've got some success and it's like, I know some stuff, and people come to you. You know, we had hundreds and hundreds of leaders come to our church every year to learn. And so you get that sense and it's like, okay, we know some stuff. We got some stuff pegged. And if you're not careful, pride builds into that and you're like, yeah, I do know some stuff. And then you stop listening and you stop learning and you stop asking questions. It's huge. It's huge. The director of the movie Superman Returns read an article about him. His name is Bryan Singer, and he talked about the importance of consulting with his creative team and listening to them. He says, "I surround myself with people who understand me and aren't afraid to tell me when I'm straying." He says, "They're not sycophants; they're friends. They treat me, in other words, they treat him as kind of a collaborative participant rather than the leader of the group." I loved this was a blog by John Maxwell that he wrote, kind of self-assessing whether you're a learner or not. I'm going to rattle these off, and you won't have time enough to write them down, but these are really good. He says, "Ask yourself: Am I open to other people's ideas? Do I listen more than I talk? Am I open to changing my opinion based on new information? Do I readily admit when I'm wrong? If you're not sure about that one, ask your spouse or someone on your team. Do I observe before acting in any situation? Do I ask questions? Am I willing to ask a question that will expose my ignorance?" Which questions do a lot of times. They're like, I don't know the answer to this, so I'm, you know, asking the question. Am I doing things in a way, am I open to doing things in a way I haven't done before? Am I willing to ask for directions? Do you read the instructions when you open the thing you got to put together? Do I act defensive when criticized? Do I listen openly for truth? So this thing of just kind of being a leader who walks around convinced that they don't have all the answers and has a question-asking persona is huge. I think of all the, I'm going to guess there was five significant course correction staff conversations every year that I was on staff in my executive pastor role. So five times 20, that's probably 100 over 20 years. I bet, and I'm going to guess here, 80% of them, by asking questions, we were able to kind of get to the core, they were able to kind of self-diagnose. I didn't have to come in and say, you did this, or you're doing this, or your attitude's like this. I just asked them questions and kind of bring that up. Question asking is it's a skill that a lot of us don't have and need to work on. Any thoughts, questions, comments about that, about walking in stupid? It's really all about humility, right? But I really think it does tons to develop a leadership culture, because if you've got smart people around the table and you treat them like they're smart, they want to stay around the table. They want to grow. They want to help grow their organization. Their respect for you grows. The last thing I would say, number 10, is using meetings and retreats to develop your leadership culture. Use retreats. So in our church, in my church role, we had one meeting a week that its specific purpose was to develop people and build culture. So in a way, you might say, well, that's a system. And in a way, it was a system, right? But it was built into kind of our weekly flow. And we did three things at that meeting every week that I think just did huge. It just was huge in helping us develop or keep a good culture. And just three, these aren't brain science. These are just real easy, three S's. So the first S was stories. And we would just sit around and share stories. So if I was leading the meeting, there'd be the whole staff there. And we would just say, okay, where have you seen God at work in the life of the church in the last 7 days? Open them every single meeting that way. And just let people share stories about where God's working and what's happening and what's going on. And it's what it does is it just opens it up. It's kind of like an open mic kind of thing. It's instead of being top down where we're gonna hold the stories and we're gonna divvy out the information that you need to hear. It's like, no, where have you seen God at work? Because He's at work in each of us. So where have you seen Him at work? And stories were huge to help minimize silos in the, you know, as a church grows, silos kind of build up, and you have the children's ministry silo and the youth ministry silo and the men's ministry silo, and you have these things, and there's a sense of this is ours and these are our people and this is our schedule and we got on the calendar first and that's our cupboard in the kitchen and that's our AV equipment and we set this room up and someone messed up our room. I mean, there's those silos kind of develop instead of kind of being all about each other. And stories help kind of diminish those silos, because you're hearing, oh yeah, God's not just at work in my youth ministry area. He's at work in various parts of the church, and you get to celebrate those stories with the whole group. So stories was part of what we did in that culture building meeting. Another thing we did was what we call a spotlight. And with a spotlight, sometimes we would do like a ministry spotlight, like, maybe, okay, this month is the Harvest Fest, and so-and-so is going to get up and talk about what we're doing for the Harvest Fest. So it might be a ministry spotlight. Most of the time, it was a personal spotlight. And that was the part that really helped us kind of build a culture. And what we would do is just have someone come up and sit on a stool like this, tell them ahead of time, because they wouldn't show up for the meeting if we told them ahead of time. So we would surprise them and say, you know, hey, today we're going to bring Jackie up here, and Jackie's on the hot seat, and she's part of our spotlight. And you can ask Jackie anything you want. And so people would ask her about, you know, her husband and her kids and their personalities and what kind of music she likes and the movies and why does she exercise all the time and whatever, just to get to know her. And then the other thing they would do is they would say, we would say, okay, let's turn the corner, and now let's tell Jackie why we're glad she's on the team. And all the things that you tend to say to people at their funeral when they're not there to hear you say about them, those are the kind of things that would come up. And so people would just kind of pour out love. And it's like, hey, Jackie, I don't even know you that well, but every time I pass you, you're smiling, and man, that encourages me, and you don't even know it. Or, you know, or hey, Jackie, you poured into my son in a way that has just changed him forever, and I never had a chance to tell you that, or, you know, whatever. Those kind of stories. And it just builds this team unity and this confidence and this chemistry, and it really just the culture of the entire organization is elevated because you're taking time to really focus on what is good in people. And everyone walks out of those just feeling great, and of course Jackie feels awesome because you know, you just don't normally have time like that. Got that idea from my daughter's kindergarten class. So when she was in kindergarten, or maybe it was first grade, she was the student of the week, one of the weeks, and as part of the student of the week, she got to invite her family, and so we came, and Heather was there as the first grader and her little siblings and my wife and I, and we sat on chairs in front of the room, and all the kids were on the floor on the carpet, and they did that. They said, okay, kids, tell Heather why you're glad she's in our classroom. And, you know, just watching what that did to her, what that did to us as parents, you know, what that did to the kids, it was huge. It's like, okay, these are first graders. Why don't we do this? This is pretty awesome. And so that happened every single week. The last thing that we did, and someone needs to come up with a better S, because we just did stuff. this is basically just communication. Leaders who are leaders, who are wired as leaders, they don't want to be left in the dark. And they feel very exposed when they are. So we saw this happen over years where the pastor would get up on Sunday morning and say, hey, and you know, this next week we're launching the blah, blah, blah. And the staff is sitting there saying, we're doing what? We're launching the what? You know, and people in the church are coming to them thinking, well, they must know because they're on staff. And then they feel like, man, I'm an idiot because I don't know about this. And so communication, whatever it is that people need to know ahead of time, is, I think, huge for building a leadership culture. People want to know. They want to feel like they're on the inside track. This is where we would say, you know what, hey, we were just talking in our leadership meetings about maybe doing a series like this at Christmas time. We haven't decided yet, but we just want you to know this is what we're thinking. So stuff even before it's completely cooked and ready to come out and serve, we're just kind of sharing and openly talking about and letting the leaders feel like they're on the inside track. So that's related to using leadership meetings to help build culture. All right, we got 10 minutes, so we can talk about anything you want to, anything we've talked about already, or anything else that popped into your brain that may or may not be related.
Did you do that with all 120-something staff, or was that broken out into smaller teams?
We did it with the whole staff.
Yeah.
Now, a good number of those staff were part-time and weren't able to be there in that weekly meeting because they were like 8 or 10 hours a week and mostly on the weekend, but everyone that could be there and
so
was there.
So you schedule like every Monday at 11, we have this.
Yep.
This,
yep. We did it on a Wednesday mid-morning, and we anytime we hired someone new on staff, if they're and especially part-time, we would say, you know, we're hiring you for 15 hours. If there's any way possible, we want one of your hours to be this hour. And you know, if they had a second job, sometimes they couldn't do that, but a lot of them tried to work their weeks around that. Yeah, like this specific topic, I would definitely do with if I was starting a church tomorrow and it was just me and I had my core of 20 or whatever it is, I would do this pretty quickly right away with volunteers. I think pretty much I'm trying to think if anything I talked about can't be I think it's all relatable whether they're on salary or whether they're unpaid volunteers. I mean, definitely failure, believing the best, you know, flexibility is probably a little bit more specific to someone who's working hours. The first two were in a leadership culture, leaders are given significant responsibility. And number two is they're also given the authority, not just responsibility, but they're given the authority to make decisions. And I said that was probably one of the biggest frustrations I hear from leaders who end up leaving churches is that I can't make any decisions. So my example about the diaper would be true to that. So just-in-time training, what we found is more and more as church culture or culture got busier and families got busier, it's really hard to get volunteers to come out for the leadership training night, you know, or whatever, the, you know, or we try to do once a quarter a leadership training. Well, more, we were getting, you know, 60%, 50%, 40% turnout, 20% turnout. And so two reasons for that. One is people are really, really busy and they're like, okay, I'm giving you my weekend and I'm giving you a small group. I don't have any other time to give you. And now that I'm kind of a church guy attending a church, I totally see that, you know. So there's part of it is that, and part of it is I just think people aren't motivated to learn until they need to learn. So I like the just-in-time training idea is I like the idea of giving them just enough up front to get acclimated. So like if it's kids ministry, you're giving them maybe enough about security and safety, and they're signing the little form for the safety check. And that's about it. And then when they get in the classroom, you're taking a few minutes every week in the classroom to just give them a little bit more training, because that's when they need it. It's like, oh, when the kids do this, this is what we do, and you're, you know, you're just kind of training as they need the training, because that's when they're most apt to remember it and learn it. Yeah, good question. Thanks for referencing a 12-year-old book too. That's awesome.
I know, some really good books. I think there are three of them, weren't there?
Yeah.
Or read them all.
Yeah. Thank you.
I was like, you know.
What's that?
What are the books?
He's talking about the Simply Strategic books. Tony Morgan and I wrote together in 2003, 4, and 5, I think. So, and two of them are still in print, the Simply Strategic Stuff, which is administrative stuff, and Simply Strategic Volunteers, which is all related to volunteer leadership. Those are still in print and available. Questions? Well, so one thing I think of, and even big churches are facing this as resources are becoming slimmer, but I think having some defined area called volunteer staff. So you've got volunteers, and maybe that's what, I don't know the pipeline thing, but maybe that's what that top tier is, I'm not sure. But having, it was really helpful to us. We had volunteers that were heavily engaged and involved, and then we had volunteer staff. And volunteer staff, we treated in every single way like a staff member, with the exception they didn't get a paycheck. But they came to staff meetings. Sometimes we give them equipment, laptop, whatever they needed to do their job. We invited them to, you know, if we had a Christmas dinner for staff. I mean, in every single way they were staff. A lot of times they would lead paid staff members. You know, so they were. And I think that. I think it's really helpful for the church to value staff. It's great to be able to, I mean, there are people in a phase or season of life or economic state that they really don't need the finances and they want to serve their church, and it allows them to be able to do that in a really significant way. And it gives volunteers something that's like, maybe I could do that. You know, so I don't know. That's one quick idea. Anything else? I'll stay up here and talk as long as you would like. Well, maybe not. I do have a plane to catch tonight. But I'll stay up here for a while. Thanks for being here. I don't know what's next, but something's next, so carry on.